you know, step one, if we can keep the virus out, that's much better than having to deal with it. So biosecurity and then husbandry, whether you've got an infection or not, the foundation of good animal care, air, water, and feed, we can't mistake those and look past them even as practitioners.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Through innovative solutions, cutting-edge research, and world-class experts, Boehringer Ingelheim helps producers operate with complete confidence. Learn more at bi-animalhealth.com. Farm Health Guardian, digital technology for better biosecurity.
Welcome to the Swine Health Black Belt, the latest in health research digested for you. My name is Dr. Clayton Johnson, and I'm the host of the podcast. Joining me this week for our episode is Dr. Joel Sparks. Dr. Joel Sparks is a veterinarian with the AMVC team. Joel, I know you've been on the podcast before, but just in case somebody didn't catch that episode, why don't you start with a little introduction for the audience?
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, Clayton, thanks for having me. Joel Sparks grew up in Michigan, undergrad at Michigan State, vet school at Iowa State, 2015, grad there, then off to Indiana. And I currently get the privilege to work with primarily AMVC managed farms in Indiana and Illinois. That takes a bunch of my time. Happy to do that.
Yep. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Joel, and sharing some perspective today about a unique case that you've had revolving around PRRS and a PRRS infection with a little bit of an unusual strain. You want to kind of set up the case for us, you know, what were things looking like at the farm? And ultimately, how did you find out you were dealing with kind of a unique virus?
Yeah, certainly. So, yeah, it's a case of recombination. I'll put that out there up front, but then I'll give a little bit more background and history to it. And really, before diving into the whole PRRS part of it, if folks have heard me talk any bit on the topic of PRRS, I always like to preface it with biosecurity and husbandry, because, you know, step one, if we can keep the virus out, that's much better than having to deal with it. So biosecurity and then husbandry, whether you've got an infection or not, the foundation of good animal care, air, water, and feed, we can't mistake those and look past them even as practitioners. So I always like to set that foundation of biosecurity and husbandry when I talk about these things. But so on to the case, yeah, a little bit on the background of it. So talking about a sow farm, 10,000 head sow farm, and really started at the offsite GDU. And this would be last year, 2023. And just for easy ways to track it, we're going to talk about like a June, July, August timeline. So gilts at that GDU had been acclimated with one commercial PRRS MLV vaccine and one of the MLVs that's out there commercially available. And actually erroneously, inadvertently, a different MLV vaccine was ordered and given to those gilts. So something we did on our end. Anyway, so that was June that happened, end of June. Gilts were moving during that time, but out of a separate group and still same site, separate group. Then it was in July, routine diagnostic testing kind of showed that we had something different floating around in the GDU. And so we kind of followed that up and then looked at records and found out the case of, you know, giving a different MLV PRRS vaccine. And so again, gilt movements had already been happening earlier in July prior to that routine diagnostic testing. So in August, we started to see clinical signs in the farrowing house at that sow farm. And I just say signs, you know, I'd consider consistent with, you know, kind of like a mild, maybe to moderate, but more mild PRRS break where we just have pigs that are poor doing on the sow, a little bit of an uptick in aborts and some other things. And then just looking at the case, we did have an addition of flu vax or flu introduction that kind of added to the challenge. But anyways, in that case, so it was pretty much that fall of through last year where we had some issues with it. And if you use like a POMP metric, PERS outbreak monitoring project metric, our pigs below baseline production for 1 4-week chunk that probably at the worst of it, we were 536 per thousand sows, 536 pigs per thousand sows below baseline production. So we can talk about the influenza co-infection, but I believe the PERS virus, the introduction of the other vaccine played a real deal in this. And so to follow the case a little bit further, you say, well, so which PERS virus was it? Was it, you know, commercial product A or commercial product B? We took a sample from some of the piglets in October timeframe, which is about where we hit the low part. Sent that off to the Iowa State, did an actual virus isolation, made we make sure we had a pure sample, and then did next generation sequencing on that to recover what kind of virus, which one we were dealing with. And it turns out it was a recombination of, we'll call it vaccine A and B, which makes sense when you think about it, that, you know, somehow the viruses mixed together to make what would be something fit to cause more problems at the farm. And so nevertheless, time goes on. We were able to, you know, put in some typical, I guess you'd say PERS disease management processes. And happy to say this time this year, we've only had, it was back in April this year, we had one positive off wean pigs. Otherwise, have been doing surveillance at the sow farm and have been negative. And we've got production parameters back to normal baseline production. So, but I think, you know, looking at the case part of it, it really goes to show that even two MLVs, if they get together, they have the potential, then they can, and I think will recombine and have potential to cause problems there. So a little bit of a long answer, but that's kind of what we were dealing with.
Take us a little deeper, Joel, on the discovery in July. You mentioned in June, the inadvertent vaccination event happened, and then kind of routine monitoring in July didn't look normal. Were you doing, because they were vaccinated gills, right? I know that's always tricky to monitor that population, period. But were you doing an MLV-like PCR that you expected to come back positive and then it didn't come back positive? Or did you sequence a PCR to try and verify it was a vaccine strain and then it didn't match up perfectly? How did you know it was a unique situation diagnostically?
Yeah. And about in the order you asked those questions. So routine surveillance. So these are just PERS PCRs on serum. And we'd expected the gilts to be negative for PCR at that time point. Occasionally we'll get a positive. You know, if you're vaccinating with gilts, you'll see these later positives come up. Not completely unusual. We followed that up with a vaccine-like PCR. So PERS screen PCR. Had a positive, followed it up with a PERS vaccine-like PCR. And that was for the vaccine that we expected to be there. Say, call it vaccine A, and it wasn't there. And we thought, oh, okay. So then we ordered ORF5 sequencing. And that's when we got a little bit better definition to, oh, why are we seeing, call it vaccine B showing up when we'd expect vaccine A? Yeah. And that's when we looked through the records and said, oh, we inadvertently had the wrong vaccine used at the site.
Yep. How about getting rid of or managing the virus at the farm that had the, you know, 500 pigs per thousand sow loss there? Did you guys eliminate this strain? Is it still there? Where are we at with that part of the story?
Right. So in that time, based on, I can't call it like, you know, diagnostic testing we did in the wean pigs, we saw, oh, vaccine B as we're using it, you know, so the vaccine that was inadvertently given was what was circulating more based on ORF5 sequencing, right? You know, I think we need to remember when we do ORF5 sequencing, that's only the 600 some base pairs of the 15,000 some base pairs of PERS virus.
It could be a recombinant, and we only pick up, you know, it only looks like vaccine B because the ORF5 is predominantly vaccine B, but we don't know what the rest of it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And so based on that or five sequencing, we said, well, it looks like it's this one. And we went through and we vaccinated the whole sow herd with that vaccine, to attempt like a homogenized immunity at that point in the herd. And then, additional things, you know, complete stopping of, any cross fostering or any piglet movement. You know, if that piglet's born in the crate, it has to stay in that crate. General cleanliness, needle changing or needle free implementation. Those were, I think, some of the basic things that we did, to take care of it up front.
Nothing unusual, it sounds like. No real, behaved like a mild to moderate per situation, and results were consistent with that across the board.
Yes. Yep. I'd say that's accurate.
How about, I'm going to ask you an impossible hypothetical, so you can, throw stuff at me later. You get a client who has this situation happen, Joel, and it's in an offsite GDU, and they got a pile of gilts in this GDU that now have been exposed to, let's call it, two different MLVs. But the client, of course, really would like to use the gilts for something other than slaughter animals. So could you ever get on board with that, Joel? I mean, how would you answer the client who says, man, Joel, there's 10,000 gilts at that GDU, and I got a bunch of farms that are starving for gilts. You know, is there any way we could get comfortable with burning out that, you know, co-infection, so to say, and getting those gilts negative before they go into a farm? Or could we go ahead and just vaccinate all the sow farms with product B in advance of those gilts coming in? You know what I'm saying? Is there any way to work your way? I know that's an impossible hypothetical, right? but how that's the reality. You and I get asked those questions, right? How would you respond to that?
Yeah. Yep. Well, let's hope that stays a hypothetical question for both you and I.
Open one hand and do something else in the other one, my friend.
That's right. Right. Well, I think this is, you raise a good point here. Like, whenever we order a diagnostic test as a veterinarian or, you know, as a practitioner, I think we got to know what we need to know what we're going to do with those results. You know, a similar question we need to ask in these situations, say we've ordered the diagnostic test and we got the results, we need to also figure out and ask ourselves the questions of, what's the goal? What's the main thing here? Like, do we need to achieve a PERS naive or negative status, negative or back to naive status with guilt as soon as humanly possible? Or do we just want to stop shedding in the wean pigs? Or do we need to maintain some level of profitability? You know, I know we talked earlier, Clayton, and at a talk I had, and you know, one time it was very clear that we can get real fancy in a lot of things we do, but at the end of the day, we just needed pigs that didn't suck on feed. Yeah. You know, we needed pigs that performed reasonably well on feed. And I think that's where, you know, the practitioner part comes in, and we say, what do we do with what we've got available? You know, do we hit them heavy with macrolides? Do we have to get real fancy with stopping gilt flow? Do we bring in a vaccine, or do we say, well, that's going to cause more recombination? Do we talk about LVI? I think those are the kind of things that we need to talk through. So yeah, in your scenario, I think, you know, step one is trying to figure out what the goal is. Yeah. Make sure we know what it is and all parties involved agree.
That makes sense.
Salmonella presents significant challenges to pig health and performance and poses food safety risks to humans. As the first and only vaccine offering live attenuated strains of both Salmonella cholera suis and Typhimurium, Enterosol Salmonella TC from Boehringer Ingelheim protects pigs against both serotypes with a single oral dose. Talk to your Boehringer Ingelheim representative to learn more.
Joel, it's a confusing area, obviously, and the answer is always going to be it depends for the right thing to do. What resources did you use to try and help offer solutions in this situation? Were there pieces of information that are available to all of us in the industry that you were able to leverage to help with communication, projection, prognosis of what's going to happen, anything like that?
Yeah, certainly. I'll, you know, this is a time to talk about, you know, the POMP, PERS Outbreak Monitoring Program. That's, hopefully I got that acronym right, but offered through Iowa State, because, you know, you, if you have a break, you enroll your herd, and then they're able to grab that data and really start to help you understand, you know, that figure I threw out that, you know, we had a measurable metric of, you know, our lowest was 536 pigs per thousand sows, to understand, you know, where are we at with baseline production? So that'd be one resource I'd point to. You know, AASB has, you know, Giovanni Trevisant has led a group and put out a couple of very helpful fact sheets on these topics in particular, one on virus recombination and one on using next generation sequencing, when and where that works. So those would probably be a couple that I'd point people to, you know, that helped in a case like this.
Excellent. Joel, I appreciate you coming on and sharing. I know it's a challenging situation when things don't go as planned, but you know, the lessons you learned from this event, hopefully they help other veterinarians, other producers, when inevitably it's not a hypothetical for them and they got to go through it. So really appreciate your time and appreciate your sharing. I know you're a busy guy. Thanks for coming on the show again.
Hey, thanks for having me, Clayton.